Welcome to the Journeys of Scientists podcast. This is a podcast put out by WAMPS, which stands for Women and Minorities in the Physical Sciences. We are a graduate student organization at Michigan State University. I am Brian Stanley. I am a graduate student in the physics department at MSU. The purpose of this podcast is to talk with other graduate students at MSU and other universities to get a sense of the type of research they do, but also learn about life as a graduate student, both within and outside the classroom or research lab. If you or someone else you know are interested in participating in the Journeys of Scientists podcast, you can email me at the email below in the show notes, or you can visit the WAMPS website, which is www.wamps.org, and you can send us a message there. Welcome, Olivia. Could you briefly introduce yourself? What is the department that you're in and type of work that you do?
I am a fifth-year PhD candidate in Michigan State's Integrative Biology Department, and I'm also part of the Ecology, Evolution, and Behavior Program. I study birds in Catherine Lindell's lab.
Very nice. So I met first-year integrative biology grad students a couple of days ago, and I will admit I do not have a biology background at all. And so what is integrative biology, and how is that different from non-integrative biology?
Oh man, that's a really complex question that I think the department actually dealt with as a whole a few years ago, right before I joined Michigan State as a grad student. Some backstory is that we were originally the zoology department, and the problem was that a lot of people associate zoology specifically with animal welfare in captivity. So everyone was thinking that, oh, if you're in the zoology department, you're going to work in a zoo. Mm-hmm. Integrative biology really redefined the department as more broad theoretical biology. We have developmental biologists who look at how organisms develop from a single cell into the multicellular organism they are. We have geneticists, we have evolutionary biologists. So integrative biology is really just this idea that we bring all of the very different evolutionary biology fields together to study them and to understand them. And that it's more about broader concepts in biology rather than a very specific applied field. So that's why we kind of veered away from zoology and went to something a more vague term, I guess. Okay. Yeah.
Is that more of a department wide thing, or is that kind of a movement that's happening grander, if that makes sense?
I think honestly, a lot of departments across the country have started kind of considering how they name their departments. I know at MSU it's kind of a big deal because we have three or four different biology departments. So we have human biology, we have plant biology, we have the integrative biology department, and really it's kind of how you think about the science, because I'm an ornithologist, I study birds. But I also have 30 other categories you could apply to my research. And so I think a lot of universities are kind of considering which label is how do we organize these biologies, and how are they which categories are the most important to organize by? And typically I think we're finding that separating evolutionary biology and ecology, from more, I guess, applied sciences human biology are helpful. I think it probably depends on the university too and what most of their students are interested in.
Okay. That makes sense. So what is the type of work that you do with birds?
I guess the broad answer is that I study predator-prey interactions in agroecosystems. I look at how predators influence prey behavior, you know, how that affects like community structure and like distributions of species. But more specifically, I study how American kestrels, which are a small falcon in North America, impact songbird behavior, like foraging behavior in cherries in Michigan. So I'm kind of interested in like how these little falcons kind of affect how these songbirds are eating, and also how these songbirds are kind of like on the lookout for predators. So we call it kind of vigilance. And we think that these falcons might be providing what we would call ecosystem services and helping cherry growers keep pests out of their crops.
Okay. So I just want to make sure I'm like understanding this whole like dichotomy here. So there's the falcons who are disrupting songbirds, and then the songbirds are what eat the little bugs that are around the cherries. That's right. Is that sort of like the line of this predator prey interaction that you're talking about?
Yeah. So I think you hit on an important point too. And that's actually a big question in the field I study. Yeah, the songbirds could eat the cherries, but they also eat bugs. So one thing we're kind of looking at is, you know, how does the falcons being around influence, you know, how many cherries are getting eaten by birds, and also how many cherries are getting destroyed by insects and things like that. And so, you know, how does a predator affect that, what we'd call like a trophic system?
Okay. And so then are you like taking into consider, or so is the, are the falcons like native, or are they invasive species, or is it more that we're doing a lot more like agriculture or like cherry growing or whatever that, you know, we are interested in this study, if that makes sense?
Yeah. So I think the falcons are native. They actually though have been on the decline in the US for the past 40 years. And so the kind of the goal was to put up nest boxes because they are cavity nesters to attract these little birds to the cherry crops and see, you know, if they provide any benefits. And so we actually do have nest boxes up. I think we have 24, 25 up in northern Michigan. And that's, you know, part of the premise of the study is there's a little bit of a conservation component that we're providing habitat for these kestrels.
Okay. Is a nest box sort of like, you know, the giant wooden birdhouse I may see in like a wildlife preserve or something like that?
Yep, that's pretty much exactly it. It's, you know, like 30-ish feet in the air, and it's a pretty large wooden box.
Okay. So is a lot of your work actually like going out into a field somewhere, or are you only in a lab?
Yeah, I do. So most of my research is out in the field. I spend a lot of time outside, like just literally counting birds and watching birds to see what they do when a falcon is around. And like recording that into a voice recorder. And that's where most of my, and then I come home and like, based on what I said in the voice recorder, I like enter numbers into a spreadsheet and go from there.
That sounds kind of like nice and relaxing though. You know, I get to sit outside and count birds.
Yeah, it's, that's kind of one of the big reasons I went into ecology and evolution was because, there's so many opportunities to be in these like beautiful places and just be outside. And I've always enjoyed the outdoors. So it's a nice way to get that.
Yeah. Okay. So you said ornithologist, were you always interested in birds?
No. I actually joke about this a lot sometimes with some of the students I teach in the department. I was really interested in like big charismatic megafauna, like lions and cheetahs and bears and wolves and things. I really wanted to study lions in Africa. And a professor I worked with as an undergrad was an ornithologist. He studied behavior. And I was like, well, I'll just kind of get my foot in the door studying behavior and then go from there. And he, you know, told me that I should take his behavior classes, and I did, and he told me to take his ornithology class, and I did. And after like doing research with him for 3 years and taking the ornithology class, I was like, oh, birds are really cool. And so I kind of pivoted away from like larger mammals, especially because larger mammals are so expensive to study. And everybody wants to study them. So it's very competitive. And there's actually a lot of literature on birds. So there's like a lot of like a foundation of knowledge to work with. I was like, you know what? I think birds are kind of the way to go here. And there's so many like ornithologists in the country. It was really, it was a lot easier to find other like people I could work with.
Okay. Was that in grad school or undergrad that you made that kind of like transition?
That was an undergrad. Yeah. We studied house sparrows in my undergrad lab. And that was really interesting. We studied like parental care. So how they take care of their nestlings.
Oh, very interesting. Very interesting. Where did you do your undergrad?
I went to University of Kentucky.
Okay. Are you from Kentucky?
Yeah, I'm actually from Louisville. And I lived in the same like house in Louisville for my whole life. And then the first time I moved out of my house, I went to Lexington, Kentucky, like an hour and a half down the road. So it was really nice.
Very nice. And so were you initially biology or zoology when you're majoring?
Yeah, actually, I was a Bachelor of Science in Biology from the beginning, but I also thought that I wanted to go to med school because I was always like a nerdy kid in high school. I was like the smart one, and I'm using air quotes because there were lots of smart kids in my school, but I was always like the very academic one that like was just really good at school, and I was like, oh, I like biology a lot, and people who like biology and are good at school go to med school. And so I was like, so I'm just going to be a doctor. And then I got into like my freshman year, I took an evolution class and my professor was sharing these crazy like stories of chasing animals around the world and like being in all these different countries and studying these like wild species I'd never heard of. And I was like, I don't know what this guy does, but I want to do that. I don't want to go to med school. I want to do that. And so that's kind of when I veered off into ecology and evolution instead of like a more physiological background.
And when did you kind of make like that transition in undergrad? Was that like pretty quickly or you were like halfway through or what?
Yeah, that was my second semester of freshman year. I was taking like a couple more advanced courses because I had like some high school credits. And so I got to kind of experience, I guess, like more specialty courses earlier on, which was really nice. And yeah, I'm also kind of like a fast decision maker. So like when I find out I like something or don't like something, I kind of like follow my gut and just go with that from the get-go. I'm like, oh, I like this and I don't really want to go to med school. I'm just going to start doing this now.
Okay. That's nice. I envy that skill. I'm a very slow decision maker. I'm like, oh, I don't like this, but maybe I'll wait it out.
Yeah, I feel like I've gotten older and I'm like, maybe I should start like thinking about things a little more before I just like flip a 180.
Oh, very cool. Okay. So when you were in undergrad, were you involved with like any other extracurriculars, you know, outside or clubs or organizations or anything like that?
I was in a sorority in undergrad. My mom was in a sorority, so I was a legacy and I joined the same sorority she did. I spent a lot of time doing my undergrad research, which I thought was a lot of fun. I was in the snowboarding club, in Kentucky.
Are there hills in Kentucky? I've never been to Kentucky, so I don't know what the landscape is.
There are actually way more hills and like mountain, the Appalachian Mountains in Kentucky, but there's also no snow. And so we actually took like a week long trip out to Colorado every winter.
Oh, very nice. That's where I'm from.
Oh, no kidding. That was like a whole different, ball game out there.
Okay. Okay. So you would like, that'd be like a winter trip or something to go fly out there.
Yeah. Yeah. We took a 24-hour bus ride out there.
Ooh, fun.
And we'd be out there for like 4 or 5 days. We'd all like snowboard intensively or ski intensively and then like 24-hour bus ride back. I think we also did there was always a spring trip too. I never did the spring break trip. And then we had a whitewater rafting trip in the fall.
Oh, very nice. Well, that sounds really cool. How are those bus rides? I feel like, you know, taking a Greyhound bus or whatever, you know, you see some interesting people.
Yeah. So the bus ride was actually like, it was a rented bus for the club. Like we actually packed a bus with like 80 people. And it was interesting because it was one of those buses where there's a bathroom in the back and like we had to have the talk multiple years in a row that like you literally can't overuse that bathroom. Mm-hmm. There was definitely always like a vibe of from the beginning, it was like a party bus. And then like after we all got settled in a couple hours, everyone pretty much just went to sleep for like the next 18 hours.
Yeah, there's not a lot in Kansas.
Yeah, we hit Kansas and it was like everyone just was like asleep. Like I had friends like sleeping on the floor in the aisleway and stuff. And then like you hit Colorado and you start, I think once we hit Colorado Springs where you like see the mountains and you're starting to, you're like an hour or two away from the like resort that we stayed at, which was different every year. Then it turned back into the party bus. It like suddenly evolved back into like really high energy and everyone getting really excited.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. That's super cool. Have you gone out recently, you know, or attempted the snow sports elsewhere?
I really want to try here in Michigan. I learned in Colorado how to snowboard, not well. Because it was like I would go for that 1 week, figure out how to get back down the mountain and get pretty decent at it, and then not touch a snowboard for like a year or even two. And I haven't been back on a snowboard since my junior year of college. And I do miss it, but I would pretty much have to start from square one again. So,
did you prefer snowboarding over skiing?
I don't know why I picked snowboarding over skiing. I think I just thought it looked like more fun. And it did until like I was trying to learn how to turn on a snowboard across a mountain, and I was like, well, this is actually really, really difficult. But a lot of the snowboarders on the club in the club just kept, they're like, just keep doing it, you'll get it eventually. And then like apparently it's easier to learn tricks on a snowboard than skis.
Well, yeah, you only have one board to worry about.
yeah and I was like, all right, well, I guess I'll just keep this up until I figure it out. And
okay, but you had no nasty falls or anything? Like you didn't break or get, you know, anything, have a concussion?
Oh, no, I was on the bunny slope, so I definitely was not going that fast. In fact, the skill I learned the quickest was just sit down when you're when you're going too fast, or like you think you're gonna fall, just like fall, throw your weight backwards. So that was
all right, super cool. And then so how did you end up at MSU?
I started looking at some of the grad students in the lab that I was in as an undergrad told me like, hey, when you want to do research as a grad student, because I knew I wanted to go to grad school, they were like, you have to look at different researchers, different faculty members at different universities. And if they're doing research you're interested in, then like you talk to them about their research. And, you know, you kind of get to a point where you talk about whether or not they're interested in having grad students join their lab. And so I actually like had a spreadsheet and everything, and I categorized like 100 different researchers. I like went through every like state school, like R1, R2 universities I could find, basically all of the like big research universities that everyone knows about, like University of Kentucky, you know, Michigan State, like all of those. And I was like, all right. And I went through their entire like biology department faculty list and like looked at anyone whose research I thought was interested and like interesting. And then like made this huge spreadsheet and was like going through the spreadsheet of like over 100 people and like narrowing it down, and based on like their research interests and things they studied, I would occasionally like email them and be like, hey, I read these papers that you wrote, I'm really interested in your research. And so I emailed my advisor, Catherine Lindell was one of those people, and she and I got to talking about how I was interested in animal behavior and behavioral ecology, which is kind of the evolution of behavior. and how I was interested in also like the applications of like theoretical science. And so she kind of does like applications of, you know, science. And she was like, yeah, I think it'd be interesting having you as a grad student. And so I came to Michigan State to work in her lab.
Oh, that's really cool. That's really cool. How have you handled that transition from moving from Kentucky to Michigan? Was that an okay transition?
Yeah, I think so. I'm only like 5.5 hours away from home. So it's really nice to be able to go back and see family pretty easily. The weather is really not terribly different. I mean, it is and it isn't. It's like similar, but the difference really is like the length of time that it is hot or the length of time that it's cold. Michigan winters aren't like that much colder than Kentucky. There's a lot more snow. And it lasts a lot longer, which is kind of the challenge. By like when March comes around, I'm like ready to be in shorts and flip-flops, and that doesn't happen here until like May. But I think overall the transition was really easy, especially because you know, I got to make friends in my department really quickly, and I didn't really like think about the fact that I wasn't like home or, you know, anything like that.
Okay. Does it rain a lot in Kentucky?
You know, I think, yeah, a decent amount. It's not like super rainy, but we definitely have like good rainy days.
Oh, okay. I don't really know anything about Kentucky.
It's really beautiful. If you are outdoorsy at all, there's a place called the Red River Gorge, which is part of Daniel Boone National Forest. And it's like apparently kind of, I didn't know it was a big deal, but I came up here and people talk about it. People go there for rock climbing all the time. So it's kind of famous on the East Coast for rock climbing. And it's got some great hiking and views.
Ooh, very
and
nice.
More mountains than here.
That's good. Yeah, it's very flat here.
It is. That was one weird transition, was like, I'm big into hiking and stuff. And I would try to find hiking locations within like a couple hours of campus, and they're there, but it feels more like a walk in the woods than a hike, because there's not a whole lot of elevation change.
Yeah, when people here say that they hike, they just mean that they walked outside, is kind of what I've noticed.
Yeah. And I, even from Kentucky, I've ventured out west and hiking a little bit. And like, I can't imagine coming from Colorado to here, because like Colorado and out west are like, I mean, that's like so much different than even Kentucky. Those are like, I have friends from California and like they do 14ers all the time, and I'm like, that sounds insane. That's just crazy. That blows my mind.
Like, how big is the department you're in, or rather like your cohort and stuff? Is it fairly big or is it small?
I think my department is relatively like medium to big size. Like I said, Michigan State kind of broke up all of the like biologies. I think it was either like 9 or 11 people in my cohort, which was actually, I think my cohort was pretty big for like biology. That group of students was pretty big. But yeah, it's nice. There are like a pretty large amount of graduate students in the department, which means there's like lots of social circles to join in and hang out and do different things with.
Okay. And is that so it's like integrative biology, like its own department that is then separate from like human biology and stuff?
Yeah. We're okay. Separate from human biology. We don't really have like a medical focus.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know when you were describing like, oh, there's all these different parts of like biology kind of like fractured a little bit. I didn't know like, oh, are you all kind of still in the same banner though? Or
yeah, I totally, at University of Kentucky, it was like one biology, like everyone was biology, and 90% of the students in that department wanted to be doctors or like dentists or physical therapists. So they were very focused on like human health and medicine and things. And the other 10% of us were like actually interested in ecology and things. So MSU is really weird because I teach here and I always kind of expect students to give me the like, well, I want to be a doctor and I don't really care about evolution pushback. And they don't, because they're all like students actually interested in ecology and evolution, because we're like two totally separate departments.
Yeah, it's, you know, as someone who whose only biology background is freshman year of high school, it always seems like biology like encompasses everything. It just seems so huge, where it seems like you would have to break it up because they're all totally vastly different of like what falls under that banner.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it too comes from like, are you looking at biology from like a basic or theoretical perspective where you're just trying to understand like how like life on this planet like occurred and how it works, or are you trying to apply it to something? Like the Fisheries and Wildlife Department does a lot of like conservation and sustainability. The human biology is like medical applications, and like health applications. You know, there's also like even like further branches of it. Like, I don't know, at UK we had majors like kinesiology, which is like human movement and like dietetics and things like that. And so they like took lots of biology, but they were like even further from like basic biology is kind of what we call it, which is like evolution and ecology and those like big concepts that kind of drive the understanding of everything else. So
yeah. Yeah. Are you involved with like any hobbies or extracurriculars now while you're in grad school outside of just research?
Oh yeah. We always joke about, I have a lot of like interest in hobbies outside of my like research. And so kind of our running joke is that like, I need to focus and get my research done so I can graduate. I train educational raptors at a wildlife rehab center.
Raptors, is that what you said?
Mm-hmm, yeah, okay. Like dinosaurs. Okay. like hawks and falcons. And I also am a falconer. So I have a, well, not right now, but during the winter season, I have a like red-tailed hawk license. I'm licensed to have like a native Michigan bird of prey in my possession and hunt with it. I take that out.
What does that entail?
So this is a big thing where, yeah, so I had to get like, I had to take a test and I had to build like a facility for, and like make a bunch of equipment to possess a bird. And then the State Department of Natural Resources had to license me. Mm-hmm. So after the test, they like inspected my facilities and my equipment and said like, okay, you're good. Like you checked off the things you need to check off. And then they also, I had to get a permit to capture a wild bird because we can only take, I'm an apprentice, so I can only take a first year wild red-tailed hawk or kestrel, because birds of prey, 70 to 80% of them die in their first year. And so we take those because they're not part of the breeding population. They're not like disrupting the breeding population. Or we are not by taking one of them. And because, the chances of them dying are really high anyway. So like, if anything, we're kind of doing them a service by like getting them through the hardest part of the year and giving them like a safety net to then try to survive again on their own. And so after all the licensing and everything, I have a sponsor who, tells me, you know, basically like guides me through the process. And I have to have a sponsor, I'm required to. And so my sponsor guides me through the process. And I take a bird out into different fields. And we, after I've like kind of taught it that I'm not going to kill it, using food and positive association. And then I teach it kind of like, hey, if you keep coming back to me, there's more food where that came from. And then we kind of go out into the woods and I start, you know, trying to make things move, prey animals move, for my hawk to chase after. And then my hawk realizes not only do I have food, but I make things in the woods move, that it can then chase.
Okay.
And then it gets to eat that.
Okay. So like when you're first, cause yeah, my first thing is like, well, what's stopping the bird from just flying away the like first opportunity that it gets? So when you like first train, are you like in a closed area or are you still like out in a field somewhere?
Yeah, you start like in a closed area. His house is called like a muse. And so like, I usually start there and it's literally just, I sit there with a bird on my glove and it's okay. Will you eat the food off of the glove with me here? Which is a huge step for them because in their mind, I'm a predator.
Yeah.
I'm going to eat him. So he can't look down at the food. And so eventually they kind of get to a point where they realize, oh, you're not going to eat me. So I'm going to go ahead and eat this food here. And then you go to like jumping small distances. And then I actually like move into my living room, which my roommates and her cat, my roommates and their cats think is great. And so there's this bird that I kind of have tied to like a creance, which is like a small, like strong piece of paracord. Yeah. So that if I need to like stop the bird from going too far, I can. And then we move it outside. So we pretty much get on the creance to up to, I think about like 100 yards, and then we start free flying. So no, nothing tied to the bird, nothing to keep the bird from getting away. And it's pretty much just trust between you and the bird that the bird is like, you're going to have food if I come to you, and you're not going to hurt me. And I just have to trust that the bird will come back. If I'm like, hey, I want you back here, you know, come get a snack.
Okay. And so then when you actually like go for the final thing and you're like making prey move and stuff, or mm-hmm. when you were saying that, sorry, is this just like, oh, wild mice or whatever that you found in the field? They're like, okay, I'm kicking around. Or do you like bring in like whatever to with you?
No. So what it usually is falconers are like small game hunters. So like squirrels and rabbits.
Okay.
Mice are definitely out there, and I have more than once turned around to catch my red tail, like swallowing a mouse hole. Like a little, potato chip, little field snack. And that is what they naturally hunt, but we usually go around and kind of like scare up like, rabbits and, squirrels. You know, we make noise, we kind of like rattle trees and things to see if something, or like, you know, bushes to see if anything runs out from underneath. And yeah, that's what we kind of have them go after. Cause it's game that's also like big enough for the human to eat. It's, you know, we call it fair chase. It's like, it's a challenge for the bird. It's not something that's like really easy for them to catch. But they are like just naturally occurring wild animals. More often than not, they get away. So it's really just kind of at that point, you're really just getting to watch like a natural interaction happen. And that's what you're really doing in falconry mm-hmm. is teaching a bird to let you stand and watch them do what they would do in the wild.
Okay. How big are like these falcons or birds?
It really varies. So American kestrels are about like, mm-hmm. like maybe a couple hundred grams and like, okay. the size of a soda can, maybe. Red-tailed hawks are a couple pounds, and they're okay. like a little bit, they're like much bigger.
Okay. So like what you take, like falcon, is it falconry? Okay. Words are hard. I was just thinking like, oh, if this is, it's a small thing and it's taking on like a rabbit or a squirrel that just seems like size-wise big, but does that not make a difference? Because they have talons or pointy feet or whatever.
I guess I should say I hunt with a red-tailed hawk.
Okay, those are like big and like fast, right?
Yeah, they're very big. They're like woodsy birds that like they'll sit really high up in a tree and they just kind of like
okay
chase things from about 50 meters away. They don't do like really long chases, or like they don't go up into flight a lot, at least not on the East Coast where there's like a lot of woods and trees. Kestrels actually naturally hunt like mice and voles and grasshoppers, the little bitty guys. Mm-hmm. And so falconers usually with kestrels will chase things like starlings or house sparrows, like so other smaller birds. Yeah, kestrels I don't think could take a rabbit down. I mean, yeah, they couldn't take a rabbit down. It would be more like watching a rodeo bull ride. In that case, the rabbit would just be like flinging the kestrel left and right.
Okay. And how I'm just thinking like that very first time when you're like trying to build this relationship with the bird, like the bird being, I would think the bird could be very aggressive and, you know, scratch you and all that sort of things. Or is it like, are they just kind of timid about you? And so that's not really an issue.
It's really, it's kind of both. And this also comes from my wildlife rehabilitation experience. Usually animals don't want to like hurt you or go after you from the get-go. They just want you to go away. Mm-hmm. And with falconry, the first couple of days, especially, the bird is tethered to like a very thick leather glove so that they can't hurt you. But really they're just kind of sitting there waiting for you to do something. And as long as like, I don't move or try to touch him or like go approach him in any way, then they just kind of, they're just watching and waiting for you to do something. And when you don't do something, eventually they learn that you're not going to do anything. And so there shouldn't really be any like scratching or what we call like footing involved.
Okay.
Because you should, yeah, you just, yeah, shouldn't be messing with the bird like that.
Yeah. Where is this refuge that you are or were a part of?
Yeah, I am one of the raptor trainers and kind of the like head of the raptor training program at Wildside Rehabilitation Center in Eaton Rapids, Michigan. So it's about 40 minutes south of Lansing, and they take like all kinds of animals. We take all kinds of raptors. We've got 6 eagles in our care right now. We also have 2 beavers that we're rehabbing, which have to be with us for 2 years because that's how long they would be with their parents. These 2 babies were orphaned. We take squirrels, we take baby possums. We also take turtles and transfer those to a rehabber in the area who rehabs the turtles. So it's a really cool operation and I'm really glad to be a part of that.
Yeah. That sounds really cool. All right. So sort of like wrapping things up here a little bit. Do you have any advice or tips of wisdom that you would give either undergrads thinking about going to grad school or like first year grad students, you know, adjusting to grad school?
Yeah, I think a couple, like the main piece of advice I would have is like, know yourself really well, know what you like, know what you don't like, and take care of yourself and make sure you're doing the things that you are interested in and the things you care about. Don't do things because other people want you to, whether that's like a mentor that you have or other grad students you are interested in or collaborators you work with in terms of research. Just make sure that you're doing the research that you want to do. If you're thinking about going to grad school, know what you're interested in, pursue that. Don't pursue something because you think it has necessarily a lot of money in it or anything like that.
Yeah, it's great advice. Thank you for coming on and doing this. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.